IKEA schedule, and then we'll be able to restart with Sugya on Monday. So we'll talk a little bit next week about how we'll proceed with that. But for today, so we have the opportunity to talk a little bit about Parshas Bereishis, which is an opportunity that we didn't have last year. Last year, I guess, was a three-day yontif. I don't remember exactly how it played out, but we weren't in yeshiva at all for Parshas Bereishis. So that being the case, so really in terms of our aliyah policy, so we really have the right to talk about both aliyahs, the first two aliyahs. And while that was especially helpful in terms of Vayelech and Hazinu, where the aliyahs are short, that's not the case here. We have very lengthy aliyahs, but many very important things, so we'll try to talk about some of the things that come up, if we have time, really, in the first two aliyahs. And of course, the topics here you could talk about forever and never fully understand them or halfway understand them. The whole episode of Maisa Bereishis is subject to a lot of debate as to how much we can understand. As the Ramban notes, that it's all a sod that's really beyond us, and that's part of the question that opens up Chumash. The famous first Rashi in Chumash asks the question which the Ramban is really asking as well, and others ask as well, as to why it is that the Torah starts with Bereishis. And as some of the later Sfarim point out, the question could really be asked in a number of ways. Why does the Torah tell us the story of Bereishis? Why does the Torah start with Bereishis? Even if we grant that we're going to be told the story, why is that the opening line? And once we talk about why it's being taught, so are we talking only about Maisa Bereishis, or are we talking about the entire Sefer Bereishis, all of the stories? The way Rashi asks the question is that we should have started from HaChodesh HaZelachem, from the first communal mitzvah. If that's the case, if that's really where you would have started from, so then that would mean that the entire first Sefer, beginning of Shmos, wouldn't really be addressed. Some of the Mefarshim talk about if we're going to start from mitzvos, so there are mitzvos in Bereishis, they don't necessarily present themselves as being given to the entire Jewish people. But we read about Pru Revu, we read about Mila, we read about Gid HaNasha. So there's a whole discussion which we probably won't get into today because there's too much else to talk about. But the question of whether those mitzvos are really rooted in their reference in Parshas Bereishis, in Sefer Bereishis, or are they rooted in their Sivoy later, and therefore we don't acknowledge them as being really mitzvos yet. But there are those who suggest that also a little bit in terms of the theme, that there is what to note, that we talk about HaChodesh HaZelachem, as the Sefer Ohel Moshe notes, it's really very different than Bereishis Bara Elokim. The Bereishis Bara Elokim is talking about nature and the rules of physics, so to speak, and HaChodesh HaZelachem is telling the Jews that they have their own way of relating to time and to space. And then it's a little bit in the spirit of Ein Mazel Yisrael, for example, the idea that the Jews have a way of relating to the world that goes beyond nature. So there is really quite a contrast between HaChodesh HaZelachem and Bereishis Bara Elokim. But whatever it is, that's the question that the Rishonim asked, that we could have started from elsewhere. So why do we start from here? So Rashi has his famous line that he quotes from his father, that this is going to be a response that the Umos HaOlam will say, Listim Atem, that you guys are Ganavim, that what right did you have to take the land? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be able to back us up, and he'll say that I created the world, I could decide who gets what. All right, so that's it. So we have world peace. What's the big fight? So we have we could settle the whole issue with peace in the Middle East. We'll just show it to Beferish Rashi. God created the world. And he gave Eretz Yisrael to us. So maybe they don't read Hebrew. So now Rashi's been translated into different languages. So why is it still a machlokas? So presumably, those who are not convinced by the rest of the Torah are not going to be convinced by this Rashi either. So this idea that the Torah tells us is here in order to convey the fact that the Jews have bilus over Eretz Yisrael, it's not really going to do so much to convince our enemies that it's true. So that's a very important point. And as many note, among them Reb Simcha Zisselbroit, the Reshiva of Hebron, in a Sefer Sam Derech, that the point of this Rashi is not to convince anyone else. It's not that when Netanyahu and Obama and Abbas sit down, then we'll pull out this Rashi and the whole thing will be over. It's not going to work that way. But there is a crucially important point, and one that's very appropriate to the beginning of the Torah, that we have to know for ourselves that we are functioning with Yashrus and with Emes. And we can't always work it out that the rest of the world is going to recognize that. It's important to be perceived that way also, but that's not always in our control. It'll often be the case that no matter how straight and decent you are, people won't recognize that or appreciate that, or they'll claim otherwise. But we have to at least know for ourselves that we are dealing with a just system. And therefore, that's a statement at the very beginning of the Torah that we're told that Bereishis Bara Elokim, God created the world, and therefore this is also within the system of morality that he can decide who lives where. The Ramban, as you mentioned, has this question from a little bit of a different angle, but the Ramban continues this theme. He takes it much further. He says it's really not only the theme of this opening line, but this is the theme of what we see throughout the Sefer Bereishis and throughout the Torah, that there is a continuing theme that God gives people real estate, and then if they sin, he sends them out. That's Parshas Bereishis is about that, right? Adam HaRishon is sent out of Gan Eden for his sin. And then the Amamim occupy Canaan, and they sin, and the Jews take over. But there is, and then the Jews are sent into Galus. So there is a constant theme that this is one of the systems of justice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, that he gives people territory, but if they sin, he throws them out. So this is all part of the background, so we should know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns the world, and therefore he makes the rules. It's also important in general, the questions of religion and morality that we're establishing with the first breath, that while morality is obviously important, is obviously crucial, but our morality is one that takes into account HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an active participant as well. That it's not simply that we can decide everything on our own, what makes sense in terms of an ethical system, but we have to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is someone, so to speak, who has a vote that's unique because he created the world, and therefore that also is taken into account into our moral decisions. And that's a crucial message that should come at the beginning of the Torah also. The Gur Aryeh, the Maharal, in his commentary to Rashi, he suggests that what's going on here is that the Umas HaOlam will have a taina on the whole concept of Kiyum HaMitzvos, especially those mitzvos that are Tluyos Ba'aretz, that they'll say that we have no claim to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there's no Kedusha HaSa'aretz. We don't actually have a right to be there, but rather we were pirates, we stole the land. And even if we took it over illegitimately. And therefore, once again, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is responding on our behalf that no, that's part of the system. And therefore, we have as much right. And therefore, the Kedusha is there fully. In terms of the question of why we start Dafki here, so the Paras Yosef has a discussion. You know, the past few weeks, we've been quoting the Paras Yosef HaKadosh. That's because the original Paras Yosef, I think I mentioned at the time, the original Paras Yosef is a sefer, it's about 100-something years old, only covers Bereishis, Shmos, and Vayikra. So there's a contemporary Mechaber who wrote the Paras Yosef HaChadash on Bamidbar and Dvarim. So that's what we were quoting in the Parshas and Dvarim. But now that we're back to Bereishis, we can refer to the actual original Paras Yosef. So he suggests that within all of this, the reason the Torah starts with this story, or starts with this point, is to convey the importance of Gezel. And we just came off of Sukkot, so he has a whole discussion there that we say Lulav HaGazel is puzzle. We can't fulfill the mitzvah with a stolen Lulav. So you could perhaps ask the question, even though there are other answers to the question as well, why don't we say Esei Dochalosa say? Why don't we say the mitzvah of Lulav outweighs the Isser of Gzela? So, There are many answers you could have to that question. That's one of them. But beyond that, he wants us to suggest that the Benotim L'Chaveros have a certain chumrah to them, which is a concept you find in other Sfarim as well, in other contexts, but he brings it in here, that Gezel has a particular chumrah to it. He quotes the whole literature there about should we even say that you can't steal from someone to save your own life, which is a whole discussion that you can have at a different time. But he suggests that here also we want to emphasize the importance of Gezel. So the Torah opens up with a story which asserts HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control over the land. Rav Soloveitchik had a different approach to this. You could read his approach, I think, in at least two places. I think Rav Schechter has this in his Sefer Nefesh HaRav. But also, if you ever read, people often read these books when they're younger, Reflections of the Rav. I think it was aimed for high school students. So in the Reflections of the Rav, there's a whole essay about this as well. That Rav Soloveitchik had a different approach to why the Torah tells us the story of Bereishis. What's the halachic value of being told this story? So the Rav thought there was a halachic value. That we have a mitzvah of halachta bedrachav. We have an obligation, it's known as a metati odei, that we are meant to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. And the Gemara, when it talks about that mitzvah in a couple of places, it primarily invokes it in the context of chesed. That just like a Kaddish Baruch Hu was a person of chesed, so we should also be a person, we should also be people of chesed, people of rachmanis, and the like. So that's clearly a major aspect of that pasuk. But as Rav Schechter has in the beginning of Nefesh HaRav, he has a whole kuntrus about this, that's not the only application of halachta bedrachav. There are many other aspects as well, and that when the Torah or the Gemara tells us things about a Kaddish Baruch Hu's behavior, that it's there in order to help us fulfill this mitzvah of halachta bedrachav. And so too, said the Rav, the reason we're told the story of creation is to suggest to us that we should be creative, that we should be people who build things and who are creative in many different ways. And in that context, he also explains the famous Medrash, which is a difficult idea to understand in general, you know, that Chazal tell us that this is not the first world that God created. That God created many worlds, Hayabono Olamos U'Machrivan. He created worlds and he destroyed them. He said, these worlds don't do it for me, these worlds are not Mahanami, and he destroyed them until he made this world, and this world made the cut, believe it or not. This world is the world that survived. So what's the message of that Medrash? So Soloveitchik suggested that it's a part of his lesson as well, that we are told the story of Bereishis in order to tell us to be creative. But it's not only that we have to be creative stam, but it's much harder sometimes to create if you have built something and it's been knocked down, it's been destroyed. And then you have to find the motivation to build again on top of that. That's much harder. That's very hard. A lot of people do phenomenal work and then something happens. People before the Holocaust wrote a massive Sfarim, and then the Sfarim got destroyed, and they never wrote again. They were never able to muster up that motivation to rebuild what was destroyed. It's very hard. So perhaps the message here is that you have to be creative, and even be creative after you're building on top of the ruins of the previous projects, to continue to be creative, to continue to build. So Soloveitchik thought that was one of the major messages of having this story here. So there's a lot that's said about that. That's the opening Rashi and Chumash, which raises this question, and there are many different approaches, a lot of them giving us various messages of extreme relevance to how we live our lives. So the pasuk begins, Bereishis bara Elokim. So how do you translate that? What does that mean? In the beginning, as it's often translated, in the beginning of creation. So it's noted, Rebekah of Kamenetsky has a discussion about this in a Sefer Emes Liakov, that there's an esnachta there in the middle of the pasuk, which means that's itself a whole thought. Bereishis bara Elokim. In the beginning, God created. So before the Shamayim Varet, so what did he create? So many understand, like the Vilna Gaon has a comment, and Dubner Magid, and many others, that this refers to the creation of time. That time is something that's also a part of this world. a time that didn't exist before the world existed to use time. Time is not a concept that is something that existed outside of creation. And therefore, so at the very beginning, God created the concept of creation. Bereshis bara Elokim. At the very beginning, God created beginnings. And then he created the heaven and the earth. And that language of bara, referring to the heaven and the earth, so the Ramban has a whole discussion about this, and many others talk about that in this context, so it means yesh me'ayin, that God is the only one who can create something out of nowhere. We don't have the ability, even if the Soloveitchik is right, and we're meant to imitate a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but we can't imitate him in that way, and we can't create mamash out of nothing. We need something to work with. So a Kadosh Baruch Hu creates out of nothing, yesh me'ayin. And the Ramban and other Rishonim explain that first, Shamayim V'aretz were created out of nothing. And then there is this material that God created called Hiyuli, that Hiyuli was the matter that was then used to form everything else. And that's a little bit beyond us, what exactly that means. But that's what the Rishonim explains, the difference between the Bria and the Yetzirah. That first God created Yesh Me'ayim, and then out of the Hiyuli, so then he formed other things. And so this language here, that God created the heaven and the land, that's the Shamayim V'Asa'aretz, so it's actually a question how to translate Shamayim V'Asa'aretz. So the Shamayim is used in different ways, in different places. That we say, Shamayim, Shamayim, L'Hashem, V'Aretz, Nasan, L'Vnei Adam. We talk about a Kadosh Baruch Hu being up in Shamayim. So that is presumably a different usage of the word Shamayim, as the Ramban discusses. That we talk about the heavens in this context, as the Shemayim v'Asa'aretz, it really means the sky and the land. This is a Gashmius Shemayim. This is not the Shemayim that we talk about God dwelling in, Kaviyachal. And based on that, so Rav Soloveitchik would respond. Rav Shechter quotes this in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. I saw that the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Sefer Emes Yaakov says pretty much the exact same thing. So when the astronauts first landed on the moon, so there were people who thought this was very theologically challenging. How could it be if Eretz Nasan Levnei Adam and Shamayim Shamayim Lashem? So how could it be that human beings were able to go up there into the sky and get onto the moon? Is that not a problem theologically? And this is discussed in the Gemara Emes Yaakov, and Rav Shechter quoted the same thing from Soloveitchik, that they weren't bothered by this. That the Shemayim that we talk about here, this is a Gashmiyas Shemayim. It doesn't mean that if you go up into the sky, you go up into the moon. There were those who thought the moon landing was a hoax at the time. It was a whole discussion. So there were religious people who said, it can't be, it's against the Pasuk. How could it be that we could get up into the heavens, so to speak, and get into the moon? So it's a different usage of Shemayim. It's a different heavens. This is not the, we don't think that God lives on the moon. It's a whole different usage, and it's not a problem theologically. And then the Torah tells us, V'aretz ha'yisoso v'vohu v'choshech al p'nei sahom v'ruach elokim erchepes al p'nei amayim. So everything was dark and was unformed. So this is again where the Ramban talks about things now being formed. V'yomer elokim yihi or v'yihi or v'yar elokim es or ki tov v'yavdel elokim bein or v'nachoshech. So that's a little bit of a discussion of Rishonim, what happened. So if the next pasuk tells us vayera vayiboker yom echad, so we believe that the day starts at night and then goes into the daytime. So the pasuk before just talked about there being light and then there was night. So the Ramban quotes an opinion that there was light and then the light went down, and then erev boker yom echad. And Ramban doesn't like that opinion because he says that means there was a day before 6 days, a day that's not being counted, because it was daytime for a short period of time, was light, and then the sun went down, it became dark, and then there was the first day. So how exactly does that work? So the Ramban doesn't like that interpretation. And there are other interpretations. It gets into a little bit the question, the very major question, and I don't know how much we should talk about it in the interest of time, but here these psukim tell us the definition of night and day, and the setting of the daytime. That we know that the Jewish day starts at night, and we have to figure out when exactly that is. That was a major machlokas among the Rishonim, and it has ramifications for two completely distinct areas of halacha. that when it becomes night, we have to figure out when night is. And that has two different sets of ramifications. One is that there are some mitzvos which only apply at night, and some mitzvos which only apply at daytime. So we have to know when is it night and when is it daytime. And also, that's what the Pasuk tells us here, the Vayera Vayiboker Yom Echad, that the new day begins at nighttime. So we have to know when the calendar switches from one day to the next. So we have to figure out when that is. So for two different halachic purposes, we have to figure out what night is. And here the Pesukim seem to tell us that night is defined by Choshech, and day is defined by light. And the calendaric day starts at night, starts in darkness, and goes to the daytime. So it's a big, big machlokas, just to sketch out the very bare bones. So we know that it's a process, that even though there's an opinion in the Gemara that it's scarifying, but we assume that the daytime turning into the night takes some time. At first it's broad daylight, and then sometime later it's going to be pitch black. But in between, it's going to take a while to turn from daytime to darkness. That's what we call the twilight zone, literally. That's what we call a dusk, twilight. So when does the day actually switch? So it's not clear. So the sun, the first part of the process, when it starts to get dark, we call that shkia, which literally means to sink, when the sun sinks down. And then when it's fully dark, so we know what we call tseisa kochavim, the stars come out, which doesn't really mean they come out, they're always out, but we can see them because it's dark enough to see the stars. We know at that point it's definitely night, but in between shkia and seis, that's what we call bein hashmashos. And the Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph that everything in between, bein hashmashos, is a suffix. We're not sure how to treat that, whether to call that day or night. And the Ritva, his comments to the Maseches Yuma, explains that it's not that it means it's either day or night, and we don't know which, but that it's halachically a suffix, that it's by its very nature mysterious, that we cannot define that time between the shmashos, between shkia and seis. So already we have a big suffix as to how to categorize the time that is bein hashmashos. But we have a major machlokas rishonim as to when that time is. And that's where the concept of waiting Rabbeinu Tam's mind comes in. And just to sketch it out very briefly so that we can get to talk about other things as well. So the problem is the stira in Gemaras. That the Gemara in Shabbos, it sounds like the time of bein hashmashos, the whole time between shkia and seis, is 3/4 of a mil. How much is a mil? As long as it takes to walk about a mile. So let's assume for a minute that that's 18 minutes. So if that's true, which is not necessarily the case, but if that's true, so it means according to that Gemara, bein hashmashos is 13 and a half minutes. But the Gemara in Pesachim, also quoting Rabbi Yehuda, they both quote Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara in Pesachim says that the time between the bein hashmashos is 4 mil. So how long would that be? 72 minutes. So that's a huge difference. So how do you resolve those two Gemaras? So how long is bein hashmashos? Is bein hashmashos 13 and a half minutes? Or is it 72 minutes? So the Gaonim and the Vilna Gaon, not related, they have the same last name, but for different reasons. So the Gaonim lived before the Rishonim, and the Vilna Gaon lived in the 1700s, but they're both associated with the approach, for different reasons, that they only worry about the Gemara in Shabbos, the 3/4 of a mil. So to them, that's the answer, that the 4 mil Gemara is talking about something else, and bein hashmashos is 3/4 of a mil. And Rabbeinu Tam, and it's really a lot of other Rishonim, it's identified with Rabbeinu Tam, but it was said before him, it was said after him, a whole very chashuva group of Rishonim all adopted this view. They said, no, we have to reconcile the two Gemaras. And that really, there's two shkias. So it's not that there's shkia and seis, but there's 3 points. First shkia, second shkia, and seis hakochav. And the first shkia is basically halachically irrelevant. And the second shkia is when bein hashmashos starts. So therefore, let's say if shkia was at 6 o'clock, so according to the Gaonim, when would Seis HaKochavim be? 6:13 and a half. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, if Shkiyah was its first Shkiyah was at 6 o'clock, so when would Seis be? 7:12. And when is second Shkiyah? 13 and a half minutes before that, 6:58 and a half. So that's a huge difference. That according to the Vilna Gaon, it's complete night at 6:13 and a half. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's complete day until 6:58 and a half. And it only becomes Bein HaShmashos after that. You follow that, basically? More or less? You know, it's a little confusing. You can't tell if anybody's following it. But that's where you get the disparity in terms of when Shabbos ends. And so even though many accept the view of the Gaonim today, so nonetheless, there are those who are machmir for Shabbos, because Shabbos is Nisr D'Oraisa, to wait until Rabbeinu Tam's Zman to end. Which could mean 72 minutes after Shkia, but it also could be longer, because it could be that the question of what a mil is also a debate, and it might be that a mil is as many as 22 and a half minutes. So it could be that maybe Rabbeinu Tam's Zman means waiting an hour and a half. 90 minutes is 4 times 22 and a half. So that's why there are those who are machmir to wait, let's say 72 minutes after Shkia, or 90 minutes after Shkia, in order to take Shabbos out. And that's a big debate. We're just telling the very bare bones of it here. But the Gra's objection to Rabbeinu Tam's view, as he says, hafush machish, that our senses tell us that it's not true. That, speaking of senses, right, so our senses tell us that it's not true that if you look out the window a half hour after Shkia, 40 minutes after Shkia, it's pitch black. Right, so how could Rabbeinu Tam say that it's daytime when it's pitch black? But the other position is not perfect for the Chush either, because if you look out the window 13 minutes and a half after Shkia, it's not really dark yet. So that the Vilna Gaon addresses a little bit, you have to modify it. And first of all, it doesn't mean it's the same all year round. It means on a perfect day, and it means at a certain point of longitude. It happens to be that Bavel and Eretz Yisrael are on the same point in longitude, so that's what we're talking about. But if it's a different point in the world, and it's a different time of the year, it's going to vary. But even that, they had a hard time pinning it down, because they tested it in Yerushalayim, and they saw it's about 22 minutes after Shkia before it gets fully dark. So Dr. Leo Levy points out in one of his books that the experts who can really know how to look for the stars, they can find the stars a little bit quicker than people who are not so expert in looking for them, and they could find it 15 minutes after Shkia day. So 15 minutes already is not so different than 13 and a half minutes. So it's a whole discussion. It's a major issue of halacha, and again, we could talk about this for hours, but that's the basic bare bones of it. It's all based on these psukim, on figuring out what or means to define day, and choshech to define laila, and the fact that the calendar day in halacha is going to be defined by that transition. And it could be, as the Rabbaz points out in Shuva, that we may have a different standard, that in terms of defining laila for the purposes of mitzvot, so it talks about the Rambam statements in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, so we might take one view, and in terms of when the day changes, we might take a different view of when we're going to consider it night. So there's a lot to say about this. These are just some of the bare bones. Hi.
Just very quickly, what's the Gaonim's objection to the view of 72 minutes?
So
the Gra and the Gaonim are not the same.
They have
the same opinion, but for different reasons.
Right, so it's a question of whether you assume that Gemara is basically, is it a steerer and you have to pass them like one or the other, or is the Gemara talking about the different context that's not relevant to calculating the time, because they seem to be saying mutually exclusive things. So it's just a question of which one is relevant in terms of the practice of our figuring out the day. So Rabbeinu Tam doesn't mean they're both relevant, you don't have to posit them together, and the Gaonim and the Vilna Gaon from different angles came to the conclusion that for our purposes of calculating the Zmanim, it's only the Gemara and Shabbos that's relevant, and the Gemara and Pesachim was talking about something else. So in the interest of time, we'll skip over most of the days of creation, not that they're not important, but to be able to get to some of the other topics. So let's flip towards the end of the first parak. When we come on the scene, a very important pasuk, Chavav, where we're told, "Vayomer Elokim, Nasa Adam Bitzalmenu Kidmusenu. That God says, let us create man. So what do we do with that plural language? Right, that's very surprising. What's pshat on let us create man? So Rashi tells us that this is in order to teach us Derech Eretz. That this is in order to make the point that we should have anivus. So even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need anybody's help, but he acted like he was taking counsel from the Malach. Now, even though this is very dangerous, because the simple reading of the pasuk, it sounds like there's more than one God saying, let us make man. And the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Tes tells us that in the Septuagint, when they translated the Torah for King Ptolemy in Greece, so there were certain things that they changed. There were 70 Chachamim who translated the Torah, and they were put in different rooms, and there was Ruach HaKodesh that they all figured out the same things they should change, because they realized that it could lead to problems. So this is one of the things that they changed. There are a lot of things in Bereishis that they changed. The Gemara talks about a lot of psukim specifically in Parshas Bereishis that they changed in order to keep things quiet over there. So this is one of them, but maybe it's not just a problem for Talmi, it's a problem for us also, right? Why should we be told that it sounds like there's more than one God? So the message, as Rashi tells us, is the message of anivus, that we should know that we should consult with others, or we should at least act like we're consulting with each others in order to have modesty. And there is a statement, there's a comment about this in the Sefer Chanukah Satorah. Chanukah Satorah was written by the Rebbe, Reb Heschel. It was a big Talmud Chacham. It's a Sefer on Chumash where he had the Divrei Torah very interesting, like Papulish or Divrei Torah. So the Rebbe, Reb Heschel, commented that the Gemara says in Sota that Gaiva is a terrible thing, and that Kol HaMisgah Kiilu Avod Avodah Zarah, that anybody who indulges in Gaiva, it's as if he worshipped idols. So that seems a little bit extreme. You know, all of us have a little bit of Gaiva. So what does that mean to say that it's as if you worshipped idols? So the Chanukah Torah says, well, we have this pasuk here, Vayomer Elokim Nasa Adam Misalmenu, let us create man. And there's only two ways to read it. Either that it means there's two gods, Chas V'Shalom, or it means that we should have anivus. So if a person is a Baal Gaiva, he doesn't take the lesson that it means you should have anivus, he's left with the other pshat. Shtei Rishuyah, so it's Ki'ilu Avod Avodah Zarah. So again, it's a little bit of a pilpulish approach. If you're familiar with the Sefer Torah Ladas, when I was young, that Sefer was very popular. A lot of quotes of Torah from a lot of places. So on the cover of the book jacket, for all the volumes, it has some of the opening Divrei Torah in faint letters behind the title of the book. So on the cover of every volume, if you look carefully enough, you could find this Dvar Torah about the Chanukah Torah about Gaiva. But that's probably not Pashut Pshat, but it is a very striking thing that here we have the possibility of getting a very wrong message. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes that risk, so to speak, in order to convey anivus. So Rav Shechter often quotes from the Beis HaLevi, that the Beis HaLevi observed that you see that we're more worried about midos roos than we are about deos roos. We're more worried about people having bad personality traits than having bad hashkafas. We'd rather take the risk of giving people a very serious misimpression on a theological level and make sure that they learn modesty, than not teach that message. So the truth is, it could be the Beis HaLevi said that, but it's not so different from what already we see in Rashi. We already see in Chazal that Rashi says that v'yesh makom lapikorsim lirdos, that even though there is room here for heretics to make a whole story, lo nimne hakasim lame derech eretz midas anava. Nonetheless, the Torah did not hold back from taking this opportunity to teach us midos. So really, it's pretty much befeirish, I think, in Rashi at least, that that's the idea, that we're willing to take this risk of possible heresy in order to teach us midos. That's an important point in general. We just came off of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So the Rambam writes in his Mishnah Torah in Hilchos Tshuva that Tshuva doesn't apply only to active averus, but it applies also to midos, a person's character traits. He has to change them in order to properly do Tshuva. And as he emphasizes there, the midah of gaiva is something that he has to change if he wants to be a person who is fully repentant and a person who is going to be zocha l'chayim haba, so he has to address this midah of gaiva. The Rambam says in general that there are some midos that most midos, for the most part, so you're supposed to try to go for the golden mean, for the derech hamamutza. A person shouldn't be too extreme. He shouldn't go to one extreme or the other. He should try to go for the middle road. It says, but an exception to this is two exceptions, is kas and gaiva. A person who's got an issue with temper control, a person who's got an issue with gaiva, so those are things that have to be completely wiped out. You have to completely stay away from them. So gaiva is a major concern. So here the Torah is going to its great extreme to teach us this lesson. Elsewhere, there are psukim that the Rishonim quote as a mucker for an iser of gaiva. The Rambam in general holds that the obligation of midos tovos, in addition to his comment on Hilchos Tshuva that one has to change them in order to do tshuva, he quotes there the pasuk in Yeshaya, Yazov Rasha Darko Vishaven Machshavosav, that in order to do tshuva, so the Rasha has to abandon his ways, and the person of iniquity has to change his thinking, has to change his qualities. But in Hilchos Deis, so he talks about the imperative of Halachta Bedrachav, that one we mentioned before, that we have a mitzvah to imitate God. And that mitzvah means also that we should have perfected midos. So we have to eradicate all of the bad midos through trying to change them. That's the key of Halachta Bedrachav. So the Sefer Kodesh Yisrael, the Sefer is a contemporary Sefer, is written by Rabbi Ehrman. It talks about the fact that, so some of the Rishonim seem to see Gaiva and the like as a lo saseh. They quote Psukim and Gemaras that have it as a prohibition. And maybe the Rambam sees it as an asay, that there's a positive of Halachta Bedrachav to try to follow in God's midos. Is there a practical difference? It's probably the same thing. That probably in both cases, it means that a person is always going to have bad midos. A person, and hopefully eventually he'll fix them, but a person is born with tendencies and it takes a while to fix it. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter famously commented that you could learn all of Shas in the time that it takes to change one midah. So we know apparently it takes at least 7.5 years to change a midah. So what are you supposed to do if you have this midah right now and you're in the process of changing it? So you're violating a lav, if you have gaiva at all, you're in violation of a lo saseh. So presumably not. Presumably somebody who's in the process of working on it is not in violation of the lav. And so therefore it's probably the same thing. There probably is a mitzvah saseh to work on it, and there's mitzvahs lo saseh to have these bad midos, according to those other Rishonim, but one is not in violation of that as long as he's working on it. And that's probably what's being suggested here. Rabbi Simon Shlita has an essay about this also in his Imre Baruch, and he notes there the Yismach Moshe, that Yismach Moshe has a comment that the idea of Nasa Adam in the plural, it refers to the person himself, that everybody is a part in their own creation, that human beings are created with potential. And that's why we also have the idea that the creation of man is not coupled with Kitov, because man is not created in a perfect state. Animals are created as is, and human beings are meant to be partners in their own creation and to make something of themselves. So they're unfinished creations, and they are told, Nasa Adam, let us together make man, and that's part of the mission of humanity in this world. Dr. Abraham Twersky has a book called Let Us Make Man, where he focuses on self-esteem issues. But this is in line with that idea as well, that we are obligated to make of ourselves the completion of creation, and perhaps that's also what we see in this pasuk of Nasa Adam. So then we go on to see that humanity is therefore indeed created B'Tzalmo, B'Tzalem Elokim Baro, so Zapashlis, this means all of humanity is created in the image of God. That means humans have a neshama, and they have the ability to think and the like. And this is the source for a topic which we'll probably get to a little bit in our Bekiyas section, the idea of Kavod Abrios in Halacha, that we spent some time, those who were with us last year, we learned Masechta Shabbos, it was a sugya in Shabbos also, we had some opportunity to talk about, but it's also a topic in the second parak of Bava Metzia, so maybe we'll devote some attention to that then. But we have a basic obligation of human dignity, which has a tremendous impact on Halacha, which is derived from the fact that human beings are created B'Tzelem, and they're created in the divine image, so therefore there is an obligation to recognize the needs of human dignity, and the Halacha sees that as well. Okay, so in the interest of time and personal inclination, we won't dwell too much on Pasuk Chavtes, which talks about the humanity eating vegetation and fruit, and reflects the fact that before the Mabul, so Bnei Noach were not given permission to eat meat. There's a whole discussion what that represents. Is that the more ideal state? Is that the less ideal state? The Ramban discusses over here the fact that there is a difference between animals and plants. Animals have feelings. They run away from predators. They have a sense of what's good for them and what's bad for them, and you can't argue that they're in the same category as plants. So that's a whole discussion as to now that that's changed after the Mabul and people are allowed to eat meat, so does that represent the perfect state or will things change? It's said in the name of Rav Kook that he believed that after the Zman HaMashiach we will all be vegetarians. It's a somewhat daunting thought, but that in order that we say in the Tefillah V'arva LaHashem Minchas Yehuda V'Yerushalayim, that we anticipate a time when there will be pleasing to God the menachos that we will bring. So the menachos are the flower offerings. What happened to the karbanos? So they say that, I don't know if this is verified, and Rav Kook, I heard there's some dispute about it, but that Rav Kook believed that Bezman HaMashiach will all go back to being vegetarians and not killing the animals. All right, we'll have to see. We'll be misbal for Mashiach one way or another, and we'll see what happens, and the truth will come out. But until at that point, just at this point, so is not yet a heter of achilas basar. So to get into the second parak a little bit, and we're even still in the first aliyah, but the first few psukim in the second parak are in the first aliyah. So Kadosh Baruch Hu seems to finish creation. Vayichu hashemayim v'aretz v'chol tzvan, vayichal Elokim b'yom hashvi malachto asher asa, vayishbos b'yom hashvi mikol malachto asher asa. So we're very familiar with these psukim from Kiddush and the like, and we know that Chazal have a big discussion about what does this mean, that we, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, finished creating the world on the seventh day, and we always say that God created the world in 6 days. This is also one of the things that the Septuagint had differently, that the Chachamim changed at that time, because it seems to contradict our other recounting of Maaseh Bereishis. The Maaseh Bereishis take 6 days, or did it take 7 days? So Chazal asked this question in a number of places, and there are a number of different answers. So one of the answers that Chazal have in the Medrash is that what was missing? Menucha was missing. And Kadosh Baruch Hu had to create Menucha. So what does that mean, he had to create Menucha? So the Siftei Chaim asks, wouldn't the world still work if there was no Menucha? Presumably creation means putting in all the parts that make the world work. So if there was no Menucha, the world wouldn't work. So some say, Taka, yeah, that's the whole thing of rest. You know, that humanity can't survive without resting at all. It needs to refresh its batteries, and that's Taka true. And the Siftei Chaim says that the idea is that we need Menucha in order to be able to be involved in learning. So we have to spend a certain amount of time creating the world, and we need Menucha so that we can learn with peace of mind. Excuse me. And the world was created for the Torah, so therefore, yeah, the creation is not complete until there is Menucha. The Shilta, sort of the Chaygon, in the very beginning, the first Shilta, the Chaygon was one of the late Gaonim, early Rishonim. He lived in the 900s. And he wrote a sefer called the Shiltos, which the Nesiv made very famous because he wrote a commentary on it. And the Shiltos, he talks about various mitzvahs in the Torah that he broke down parsha by parsha. So in the opening one, he talks about Shabbos, and he says that we have to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? That he took off a day to dedicate the world. He had like a Chanukah Sabayis, And it's okay in that. We have to have a recognition of that once a week also. Because he had to celebrate the creation of the world. So that's in keeping with an idea that many have. It's a little bit expressed differently. But the idea that we say Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. And what the notion of Olam Haba is that Olam Haba is a place or an existence which is not a world that's meant for creation. This world is the world for doing and creating and accomplishing. And Olam Haba is the world in which we enjoy that which we have created, where we are able to sit back and reap the benefits of that which we have done. So it's a wonderful place, but it's qualitatively different than this world. And our opportunities are restricted. In this world is where we can actually do things and accomplish. I think a few weeks ago before Yontif, Parshas Vayelech, we probably spoke about that a little bit, that Vayelech maybe represents the nature of man in this world. He's always doing things. While Olam Haba, the Gemara Masachas Brachas, and elsewhere, it describes it as a context where Tzadikim Yoshvin, Vatsayim Barashayim, they sit, they're not moving, they're not walking. So we need this world to accomplish and the next world to enjoy that which we have accomplished. So Shabbos is Me'ein Zeh. Now we have 6 days a week to actively do things in the world. And then one day a week when we're not allowed to impact the world anymore. That one day a week we enjoy it, so to speak. We reap the benefits of that which is created, but we don't add to creation at all. And it puts us in the mindset of what Olam Haba is, so therefore we call it Me'ein Olam Haba. It's that same type of mentality, and it's that same type of atmosphere in the sense of Me'ein. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took off a day, Kaviyachal, to celebrate his world, and Olam Haba will be the time when we can celebrate what we have created in this world, and we have to chaperayin and use the time when we're here to accomplish as much as possible. There are other answers in Chazal as well. We mentioned, I think, before Yantiv, because it was relevant to Tshuva, the Beis Halevi's comment in a Medrash about the blacksmith's hammer. We talked about that there is creation that we see and creation that we don't see, like the blacksmith who lifts his hammer up and then brings it down. So it looks like all of his work is when he hits the anvil, but we know that it would only be effective if he lifted it up first. So too, creation, there's active additions to the world, and then there is recreation, there is the new hischadshus avriya, without which the world would not continue to exist, so that is still going on Shabbos as well. But there is another approach that the Medrash has, and Rashi here quotes the Medrash. Rashi quotes, in the second Lishna, Rashi quotes the point we said before, that the world was missing Menucha. Right, but in the first Lashon of Rashi, so he quotes the Medrash Rabbah, which has a fascinating idea. That we know that we have a din of Tosefta Shabbos. And it's not only during the summertime when we need to start Shabbos early for convenience, but all year round there is a mitzvah of Tosefta Shabbos and Yontif. Presumably that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. That's how most of the Rishonim understood it. At the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tes, the Gemara remarks on the fact that the Torah in Parshas Emor talks about fasting on Yom Kippur on the ninth day of Tishrei. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Yom Kippur is not the ninth of Tishrei, Yom Kippur is the tenth of Tishrei. It's an important thing to get right. All right, so says the Gemara in one answer over there, that Mikan Shemosifin Michal HaKodesh, that this shows us that we have to start the Kodesh early. And the vast majority of Rishonim understood that to mean that that's a din min haTorah to start Shabbos and Yontif early always. And the Rambam is the exception here. The Rambam only quotes exactly what the Pasuk says. So the Rambam only quotes it in the context of Yom Kippur. And even within Yom Kippur, it's only talking about Inui, about the fast. But to start the Yesh Malacha early, he doesn't talk about it. Just says you have to start the fast of Yom Kippur early, that's what the Pasuk is talking about. So then there's a whole debate in the Achronim. Does the Rambam acknowledge Tosefta Shabbos on a level midrabanan, or not at all, because he doesn't seem to talk about it at all? So that's a whole discussion. We talked about this a little bit last year in the context of Shabbos. But there is a lot to figure out when we talk about starting Shabbos early. So why would you start Shabbos early? So what's the mitzvah about? So it could be about adding on Kedusha to the world. right? That you want to bring in Kedusha Shabbos early. So that would make sense if you believe that what's happening is that you actually can extend Shabbos. There are some Rishonim who seem to feel that way, that's the way it was interpreted in the later Sfarim, that Tosefta Shabbos means you can actually bring in Shabbos early. You've heard of turn Friday night into Shabbos, and this is turn Friday afternoon into Shabbos. It's broad daylight outside, it's completely chol, but because you brought in Shabbos, you could declare it as Shabbos. While the other Rishonim were not so ambitious. Another Rishonim, if you have to read this into what they're saying, but other Rishonim didn't seem to think you could actually make it into Shabbos. Shabbos is going to start whenever it starts. So you start Shabbos early, you're essentially pretending. So why would you pretend? Why do you need to pretend Shabbos? The real Shabbos will come in soon enough. So why should you abstain from Malacha if it's not yet Shabbos? So they point to this Medrash, the Rashi quotes here, that the Medrash says, what does it mean that God finished creating on the seventh day? It doesn't mean that he was actually working on the seventh day. It means he was working the first 6 days, and he stopped a gazillisecond before Shabbos. So close to Shabbos that if we had been there, it would look to us as if he was working on Shabbos. Because we don't have a gazillimeter to tell the difference between right before Shabbos and right after Shabbos. And therefore, says the Medrash, that since we can't make such a fine distinction, so we can't wait till the time Shabbos actually starts, set aside the whole thing we talked about a little while ago about Rabbeinu Tam and the Gaon and what time Shabbos actually begins. Let's say you could know Shabbos begins at 6:12. But who knows when 6:12 is? It's very easy to make a mistake. So if we'll say we're going to do Malacha until 6:11 and 59 seconds, so the chances that we'll be Machal Shabbos are pretty high. So this Medrash on this Pasuk, it sounds like you're saying that we should create a buffer zone so that we shouldn't violate Shabbos. So that really sounds a little bit like a Drabana, right? It sounds like a Gezeirah. So if you follow the Rambam and you believe the Rambam thinks Tosefta Shabbos is Drabana, so it works that well. That's a Gezeirah Drabanan that we shouldn't come to be Mechal Shabbos. But what if you believe, like most of the Rishonim, that Tosefta Shabbos is Daraisa? So does this still make sense? It could be. Have we mentioned yet this year of Yosef Engel's essay in Lekach Tov? I know we talked about it a lot last year. And the Sefer Lekach Tov for Yosef Engel has an essay where he talks about the question of, does it ever happen that there's a mitzvah in the Torah that's fully minat Torah, but it's there for a protective purpose. It functions like a drabanan. That it's there to protect another mitzvah. So he thinks, yeah, maybe let me think about it. There's about 16, 17 examples he come up with off the top of his head. So one of the examples he quotes in his list, he quotes this Medrash. He says that this Medrash tells us that Tosefta Shabbos is essentially a harchaka, is essentially something that we do in order to create a buffer zone so we shouldn't come to do malacha. And yet, nonetheless, it's a din minat Torah. So he says that's a proof that you could have a din minat Torah that's essentially a siyav. He has a number of other proofs, but this Medrash is one that he quotes. Rabbi Chalapshita had a whole article about this. He printed in one of our journals. So this is a big question in Tosefta Shabbos about whether when you bring in Shabbos and Yom Tov early, does that mean that you've actually started Shabbos, or does it mean that Shabbos is going to start when it starts, but you'll abstain from Malacha during that time? So there are all kinds of questions.
That gets a big issue if it's Durbanan, so I can make Kiddush.
Right, so that's going to be a problem anyway for the Rambam, because the Rambam says explicitly you can make Kiddush while it's still light outside, and the Rambam at most holds this Drabanan. He may hold that it's not Shabbos at all. But so that's the Achronim we'll talk about, that how could it be the Rambam holds Tosefta Shabbos is either Drabanan or nothing, and yet he acknowledges, because it's a Gemara, that he acknowledges that you can make Kiddush while it's still light outside. So that you have to explain differently, because even for the Rambam it's going to be an explicit issue. But there are approaches to that. Among them, the fact, as Soloveitchik commented on and Schechter expanded, that the Rambam probably does not require Kiddush to be made on Shabbos. It's made close to Shabbos, and Schechter explained based on the Rav that this is something we could explain looking at the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, when he talks about Muktzah, It says we have a prohibition to move things on Shabbos in some contexts, and that is because we want to create a different atmosphere, as we just noted a few minutes ago in the context of Shabbos, but also because we're afraid that maybe you'll have somebody who's not doing malacha because he just doesn't have anything to do. Many years ago, Rav Soloveitchik gave an interview to the commentator where he said that when I first came to Boston, so there were very few people who didn't work on Shabbos, and some of them, if they didn't work on Shabbos, it's because they were octogenarians. They didn't work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday either. So if you don't know what that word means, it sounds like some kind of religion that has Shabbos every day of the week. But what he meant was there are people who were retired, people in their 80s, so they don't work all week long, so they didn't work on Saturday either. So the Rambam says you can have people who are not going to do any malacha because they don't have anything to do. So we have to make it clear that you're abstaining from malacha is not because you have nothing to do, but because Shabbos is Kodesh. So he probably understands Kiddush in that light, that you make Kiddush before Shabbos, or close to the beginning of Shabbos, or after the beginning of Shabbos, but around that time, in order to make an announcement that the Shvisa Mimalacha that's taking place is not random or is not by default because you have nothing else to do, but it's an active decision to abstain from Malacha because of Kedusha Shabbos. So Kiddush has its own explanation. But the Rishonim and the Acharonim fight about a lot of other issues, that if you bring in Shabbos early, is it fully Shabbos? So could you have your Shabbos Suda then? Or should we say that it's not fully Shabbos and you'll abstain from Malacha, but you should wait till it's fully dark in order to have your Shabbos Suda? And that was a machlokis in the Rishonim. It's 2 days in Tosfos in the 10th Parak of Pesachim and Saritas and Mibes, and it's also a machlokis between the Taz and the Marashal. The Taz says there's no problem having your Suda Shabbos early because it's fully Shabbos. And the Maharshal required you to at least eat a little bit after dark because it's not Shabbos until it actually becomes Shabbos. You're just abstaining from Malacha during this earlier time. And this is L'shitasam, so we just had Shmini Atzeres. So the Maharshal had a chumrah that if one brings in Shmini Atzeres early, which presumably he should do because the mitzvah of Tosafis, still he shouldn't eat yet. He shouldn't eat dinner yet. Because what's he going to do when he eats dinner? So the Gemara says that on Shmini Atzeres and Chutz La'aretz, you should sit in the sukkah but not make a bracha. So what are you going to do? So you'll bring in Shmini Atzeres early. You'll sit in the sukkah. You'll want to not make a bracha because that's the din for Shmini Atzeres. But it's still daylight outside. It's still sukkah. So you're going to want to make a bracha on the sukkah. So what are you going to do? You can't resolve it, so you should wait till dark to eat. And the Taz says, no, what are you worried about? There's no confusion whether it's Sukkot or Shmini Atzeres. Once you bring in Shmini Atzeres, it's full Shmini Atzeres. So the rules of Shmini Atzeres apply. It's not Sukkot. So this, in general, is a discussion that comes up a lot of places in Halacha. Do we assume that Tosefes Shabbos means it's actually Shabbos because it's a concept of Tosefes Kedusha? Or do we assume, like this Medrash sounds, that really it's kind of a buffer zone to protect us so that we shouldn't be Mechal Shabbos, and therefore it's probably not real Shabbos, and therefore we don't actually perform the mitzvos of Shabbos. Pesach night is an exception to this story, because Pesach night, almost all the Rishonim agree that the mitzvos of the Seder cannot be performed during Tosefes for various reasons. Among them, that the din of Matzah and Korban Pesach are tied into Laila, not just Pesach, but Laila. It has to be actual night. So that's how most of the Rishonim maintain that the Seder night mitzvahs, even if you assume that you bring in Pesach early, it's fully Pesach, you still can't fulfill those mitzvahs during the time of Tosefes Yontif. Which is why then also, because of the Gezeirah Shavah Tesvav Tesvav, the Ramah says, we just had Sukkot just now, the first night of Sukkot, he says to wait until it's fully dark for that as well, because of the relationship to Pesach. So if we had more time to go through the whole sugya at more length, so you'd see that basically Tosefes Shabbos applies across the board to every single Yontif throughout the year, with the possible exceptions of Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Sukkot, the last days of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, the first days of Pesach, Shavuos, and Tisha B'Av. Basically, every Yontif you could talk about, there's some quirk in terms of how Tosefes applies. But in theory, it applies to every Yontif across the board. Okay. So that's in terms of some of that pasuk. So then the next pasuk goes on to say, or pasuk Dalet, beginning of Sheni. Let's get a little bit of Sheni in the few minutes that we have. So the pasuk begins, Eila told us Hashemayim v'aretz bihi baram. So this idea of God's creation of the world and the Shemayim and the Aretz, it is a machlokus in the Medrash that according to Rabbi Lazar, there's two different categories. Everything in the Shemayim comes from the Shemayim, and everything in the land comes from the land. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's not the case, but it's all a mixture. They're all one creation together. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky suggested this is a philosophical machlokas about whether Kodesh and Chol are completely distinct or are they unified, and that this is Lashitasa, that Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua are the ones who also argue about the character of Yantif. That according to Rabbi Lazar, so Yantif should either be Kula Lachem or Kula Lashem, that either you're going to focus on God exclusively or you'll focus on yourself, but it can't be both. And Rabbi Shua's opinion is it's chetziv lachem v'chetziv lashem, that it's a combination of both. That's how we see this world, as a world in which the Kedusha is mixed in with the Gashmias. He notes Rebekah Kamenetsky in that sense, that we have all the Yom Tovim, so they're patterned after Nisan, but the Torah also mentioned what's going on in the world, Chag HaKatzir and Chag HaAsif. At the same time, as we talk about the historical context of the Yom Tovim, there's also the Gashmias components that are also invoked because we believe that it's all mixed in together. He goes on to suggest that this machlokas or Blazer and Yeshua is also Lashitasam, to get a little Bav Metzia synergy here. So the famous Gemara in Bav Metzia, in the end of Hazav, where the Gemara talks about Lo B'Shamayim Hi, a famous machlokas, where the Chachamim were arguing, and the question was whether all the signs that came down from heaven could be machriya, the halacha, one way or another. And then a baskol came down, and the baskol said the halacha is this way, and the chachamim didn't accept it. They said that lo b'shamayim hi, we don't paskin based on a baskol. So there also is a machlokas of Blazer and Yeshua. So he suggests that according to Blazer, we would follow the baskol. The baskol is kodesh. But according to Rabbi Yeshua, the Chachamim are Kodesh also, that Kodesh means that it's a mixture of the Shemayim and the Aretz, and that the Kedusha gets involved with the Gashmias, and therefore the Chachamim, they also have a vote, and they can also outweigh the Baskol. It's also a part of the process. A fascinating idea. Just to throw in a few more thoughts before we have to go to the Av Mincha. So here in Pasuk Hey, so the Pasuk says, V'kol siach asada terem yia ba'aretz v'chol isav asada terem yitzmach ki lo himtir Hashem alokim al aretz v'adam ayin la'avodas adama, that the dew and the rain has not yet come. All of the rest of creation is in place, but the rain and the dew have not yet come. Why? Because v'adam ayin la'avodas adama, that we don't have any human being to work the land. And the Rishonim quote from Chazal that it means we don't have people to appreciate it, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to provide the good without people who are there to be able to be Makir Tov and to pray for it, which are key components. Why the Geshem is so special, there are those who have written about that at length, why it's different than the rest of creation. But it emphasizes the importance of Hakaras HaTov. Rav Hutner used to say, Asur Lasos Tov Misha Eino Makir Tov, that we can only do good in a context in which there is Hakaras HaTov. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches this lesson here also, that until human beings were around to appreciate it, so this was not brought into play. And Chazal also understand that this is the big sin of Adam HaRishon, that Adam HaRishon was thrown out of the Gan because of his Kfiyas HaTov, because he denied the good that God provided for him. And he says, Haisha Asher Nasati Imadi, that here you gave me this wife, and she caused all the problems, and even though that was a tremendous kindness, so he took that as something to reject and to deny, and therefore he got thrown out of the Gan for that reason. And the Veli Lopian suggested, it's quoted in the Sefer Sifte Chaim of Rav Friedlander, that there's a lot to discuss about why it is that if tshuva works, our whole past month was based on the presumption that it does work. So it's kind of depressing that we read all of, or we focus so much on tshuva for a month, 2 months, and then we read Parshas Bereishis, which seems to say that tshuva doesn't work, right? Because Adam HaRishon sins and gets thrown out of Gan Eden, and then he doesn't go back. So what happened to tshuva? So there's a lot to say about that. We can talk about it more in future years. We get up to the Adam HaRishon part. But just in terms of the concept of this pasuk, so Rav Elie Lopian suggested that since the issue was that he was kofur batov, he said that this woman who you gave me, she's the cause of all my problems, so he could do tshuva for the avera. But this idea of kfiyas hatov he still had, and therefore he just wasn't an appropriate inhabitant for Gan Eden, if that was the case, and therefore even after he did tshuva, so he didn't go back. Okay, so just to quickly look at some more of the psukim before we run out of time. So the pasuk tells us, the pasuk tests, "Avayatzmach Hashem Elokim and Hadama Kol Itz Nechma LaMariv Tov LaMaichol VeItzachayim B'Soch Hagan VeItzHadas Tov V'Ra." So where was the Eitz Hadas? So Toch Hagan was where the Eitz Hachaim was, and where was the Eitz Hadas then? The Toch Hagan is put in the middle there. So it's a big discussion in the Rishonim how to understand exactly where they were. Rabbeinu B'chaya understands that they were two halves of the same tree. That's the way to say Be'emtza Hagan. If we're going to say that Be'emtza is an absolute geometrical middle, it has to occupy only one space, so then maybe it was the same tree, and that half the tree was the Eitz Hadas, and half the tree was the Eitz Hagan. So okay, there's a lot to figure out about that. And the Torah goes on to describe the Gan, and then it says Pasuk Tezvav, Vayikach Hashem Elokim Etz HaAdam V'yanichehu B'Gan Eden L'Avda L'Shamra, and he placed him in Gan Eden in order to work it and to protect it. And Rav Soloveitchik in his essays in The Lonely Man of Faith and elsewhere has commented extensively about how man is given society in order to conquer it, in order to protect it and develop it. And there's much to say about that in terms of man's role in the world and protection for the environment and developing the environment and developing the world. Rav Soloveitchik commented about this many times in many essays at length. But it's a little bit of a discussion also with the La'avda L'Shamra. So Gan is presumably Zachar. So what's with the feminine words? La'avda L'Shamra. So the Sforno suggests that it means his neshama, that he worked on his neshama through his involvement in the Gan in order to protect and to develop his neshama. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in his Sefer that he thinks that's rachok, he thinks that's difficult. Even for Drush, he thinks that's hard to say that that's the pshat. He was a big bucky in Dikduk, so he has the whole discussion about how grammatically you could account for why you would be in the keva. But this is a very packed term, l'avda l'shamra, whether it talks about man's obligation towards his environment or man's obligation towards himself, in the context of Gan Eden, that's a discussion. We mentioned before of Halachta Midrachav about God's Midos. So the Gemara says that the Torah begins and ends with Chesed. That the last thing we read about in the Torah last week was about, this week really, a few days ago, was about God taking care of Moshe Rabbeinu. God buries Moshe Rabbeinu, it's Kovar Mesim. So the Gemara says it ends with Kovar Mesim and it begins with Chesed. What's the Chesed in the beginning of the Torah? So the Gemara identifies Malbish Arum. That the first thing he does is a chesed, he provides clothing for Adam and Chava. So that happens really later in the parsha. It's not the first thing in the Torah. So there are some who suggest that you could find it a little bit earlier, that the first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, it's a chesed, is does Hachnasas Orchim. And that's what this pasuk means, V'yanicheyu v'Gan Eden, that God gave them a place to settle, so to speak, in Gan Eden. That's Hachnasas Orchim. And there are some, I think Marina Rabbeinu Bechaya says, that if you go back even further, that the whole creation, God gave humanity a place to live by creating a world. So the whole act of creation is initial Hachnasas Orchim. So it's Falachta Bedracha for that reason. So we could start the Torah with that story just to teach us the Midah of Chesed of Hachnasas Orchim. Okay, so just really running out of time. This next pasuk says, Veisav Hashem Elokim Ala Adam. And the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin tells us, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim, so that's the mucker for the Chiyuv of Din. that there are seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, that there are mitzvahs that apply not only to the Jews but to all of humanity, that are given already to Adam HaRishon, and there's one positive mitzvah, that's the mitzvah of Din. And that mitzvah is learned out from this pasuk. It's a machlokus in the Gemara and the Sanhedrin, whether it comes from Vayitzav or it comes from Elukim. But this theme of Din by B'nai Noach, so it was a major machlokus. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk about it in some of the future weeks. But the Rambam, just very much b'kitzer, the Rambam thought that it means just an enforcement of the six mitzvos. The six negative mitzvos should be enforced through the positive mitzvah of a justice system. And the Ramban had a big chiddush. The Ramban is coming to Vayishlach. We'll have to discuss why it's there some later date, but the Ramban in his commentary to Vayishlach understands that it means that the whole Choshen Mishpat that we have, that we're learning this year, we talked about this a little bit the first day, that that's relevant to all of humanity, that everyone's got to follow that code. So the Ramah has a tshuva, and the Ramah thinks that maybe it's Tali in the Machlokas and the Gemara. The Ramah in his tshuva in Siman Yud, it says Vayitzav, if that's what it's about, so it means that they should have their own justice system. And if it's Elohim, so Elohim, B'lashon Chol, and the Torah sometimes refers to Dayanim, it means the same system of Din that we have. Okay, so there's a little bit more we should say about this. We should talk about Ezer Kenegdo and the like. So we shouldn't leave that topic out. So maybe on Sunday was a Bekiyas day, so God willing, we'll have to refresh our memories and pick up a little bit in the second parak. But maybe we'll spend also a few minutes just finishing off this Aliyah, talking about some of the important themes that come up, which shouldn't be neglected, the theme of Ezer Kenegdo and the like. So God willing, we'll pick up with that on Sunday. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. Welcome back. Thank you.